All right, welcome to episode number 11 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us once again, and boys, it's been a massive week in the Inside Running Podcast kind of world. We've had a massive number of downloads the last week, thanks to our friends at Runners Tribe promoting the show with a very nice and informative article about the origins of this podcast and why we created and what we try to bring to the people every week. And not sure if you boys have heard any feedback, but it's been pretty rewarding to hear a bit of feedback from some of the listeners out there. How's it going? Welcome for the show again.
Thanks, mate.
And what's been happening in the world of Brad and Julian? Kick us off. Brad, what have you been up to?
I've had a really quiet week. Still on school holidays. And so last week I didn't have any sessions at all, so it was just easy jogging. So relatively fresh.
Yeah, right. What have you been doing during the days if you've just been jogging on school holidays, just chilling out?
Yeah, it's been plenty of Netflix and cricket, tennis, and now the cycling's just started. Yeah. So, but having said that, the week of just jogging, I thought it would be really good for me, but by the end of the week, I was actually struggling. So I guess the first couple of days, it was just getting over the previous week, and it was still pretty hot, so I was struggling a bit with that. And then on Wednesday, I went for a run with a few of Dick Telford's boys, and I did 20K and didn't feel too bad. And then the back end of the week, I started to feel really ordinary, and I think it's a combination of just being a bit stale from going from a big week with, you know, a fair bit of intensity to just jogging, but also sitting around more during the day. I think my back and my hips really get quite locked up when I'm not moving around, and because I'm not running much and spending more time on the couch, I really struggled the back end of the week. So
yeah, right. Let's get straight into it. So why the jogging week, maybe to start off, and then what did it look like? So how many Ks each day?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the reason why I did it was, me and my coach felt like we were traveling pretty well, and I guess a bit like I was for Berlin, and I guess we didn't want a repeat of that where I peaked too soon. So we thought maybe by just taking a bit of a break, it would then prevent me from overcooking it. So that's the reason why we did it. In terms of the volume, Monday and Tuesday were both just 45-minute runs. And I was pretty tired on both those days. Wednesday got out for 20K with Dick Telford's guys. It was nice to just run with people for a change and have a good chat. And it was quite a leisurely sort of 4:24 kilometre average pace. Thursday was just 45 minutes in the morning, 35 minutes in the afternoon with some strides. I did an hour on Friday. And then I did my long run on Saturday, just because I felt like it had enough, you know, sort of downtime, and like just really struggled. Just wasn't moving well across the ground. My heart rate was really high for the pace that I was running at. Just felt, yeah, crap. And I just put that down to probably being a little bit stale and, as I said, just sitting around a lot during the day, all week. But having said that, I figure in the long term, it'll do me some good. And I remember you saying in a previous podcast a while back that during an easy week, you sort of expect to feel good. But I think it was, did you say that your coach said that you don't feel good on the easy week? It's the week or two after the easy week that you start to feel good.
Yeah, that's correct. I did say that. I'd always have that third week easy when I was leading into Berlin, and you expect to smash everything out of the park and feel amazing because you're only doing 130, 140K weeks. And then you feel shocking, but it's the week after when you get back into big mileage that you feel good again, and it comes to it comes in favour for you. But that's interesting. Your heart rate data was still high. Like, shouldn't your body have been recovered and that heart rate be back, like, even lower than it was before?
Yeah, but that's where I think because I've got a bit locked up through my hips and my back from just sitting around a lot, I don't think I'm quite as efficient. So I'm obviously working a little bit harder for the same pace. And that's probably why the heart rate was a bit higher. Like that, the 30K that I did on Saturday morning, it was one of the hardest long runs I've done in months. I don't think I could have run another 5K. I just really struggled.
How's the head from Brad Croker? Like, you're usually pretty much dotting every I, crossing every T, like pretty meticulous in your planning. Like, you're not letting this get to you?
No, not really. I guess we're, I've got a pretty big session tomorrow morning, so we'll have a good indication of how I'm going after that. And I trained pretty well on, Monday I did a session. So, I think long term it'll be good for me.
Yeah. How many Ks you still hit for the week?
121. Yeah. So not a lot.
Nah, still enough though, isn't it? Wise man, he wouldn't have lost any fitness there, would he? Like, that's a good move this far out from Lake BY Marathon.
Well, I've talked to a few of his old girlfriends. They say that long time trouble peaking too early. So
that could be the best gag in the first 11 weeks.
Yes. No. How long
you been practicing that one, Julian?
I just thought of it at the start. I thought, oh, I'll just hold off here, watch your video on Facebook for a little bit, let Brady do his thing, and then I'm banging there.
Jeez, lucky I threw it to you, actually. I set you up real well.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was always going to come out.
So what do you think, Julian? Good move?
Oh, yeah. I don't mind it. I mean, I don't know how you're feeling, but sounds like a good move. How far out are you? How many weeks?
So at the end of that easy week, I was 7 weeks out.
Yeah. I think if you listen to Road to Berlin, I kind of used to say, like, my old coach used to actually have us not even really run like 5 weeks out, pretty much just have a very light, like you said, jogging, no sessions, like you've done basically, but you've done it 2 weeks earlier. So you hit the race with more momentum. And you're not cooked 2 weeks out. And I think there's merit to that.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I was coming on a bit too quick. Just like all my sessions were probably better than I expected them to be. So, I'm happy with where I'm at this point.
Yeah, you're in a good spot.
Don't be scared of being fit, though. Like,
No. Yeah, I think if I had to do it again, I may have chucked in just a really light session of maybe, I don't know, 10, 30-second efforts with like a minute slow sort of jog or float, just something to turn the legs over that's still not going to take anything out of me, but just to break up all the jogging that I was doing.
Did you do any strides or anything?
Just one day I did some strides.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just good learning for you. Like, first time you've tried it, feed that back to the coach, what worked, what didn't work.
Yeah.
I think the proof's got to be in the pudding in a week and a half, 2 weeks' time as well, to see how you're feeling then.
Yeah. And I reckon, he actually said to me before the end of the week, he said, look, you're probably going to feel a bit stale like the first part of the next week. And I guess it's similar to those people that, you know, train for a marathon and then shut up shop for like 2 weeks before it, and they often feel pretty ordinary and stale. And so I reckon that's exactly what I was feeling. But I'm just lucky that I didn't have to race at the end of that week.
Yeah, that's it. Moose, talk us through your week. What's happened?
Just another standard week. I was thinking about having a lighter week this week at the end of last because I was a bit sore, but it just progressed pretty well, actually. So didn't really take a down week, to be honest. Just rolled through. What did I do? Monday was just easy jogging, which was quite good. I think I did a run in the morning. We always do Radford, which is still doing the strength and conditioning in the mornings, which is good. So that was fun. Sorry about this. I was just looking at Brad's week, so I got to get my week up. I'm not that good at remembering stuff. It was from Sunday.
Yeah, so you did Radford's, then you did a run at Mulligan's, I reckon. What's the go? Why are you naming your runs the same thing that Brad names his?
Oh, Mulligan's, like, you have it again, right? That's what he's talking about. You have it again. It's like on repeat.
Oh,
I think he's trying to get a bite out of me, that's all.
Maybe, but it didn't work, clearly. Born to Run. Oh yeah, so Monday, last week, ran with Blake, Born to Run. It was hilarious. Someone, that's Blake. So basically, one of the guys, he actually won, one of the guys who was on his Solomon team made some meme about Blake Born to Run, called him Born to Run as a nickname. And I've just taken that and run with it. It was a pretty weird thing to do. So I call him Born to Run. He doesn't like it. I think it's pretty funny. And so he's coming to gym now with us. Now, Tuesday was good. Had a good session with Charlie Park. So Charlie is a run strong athlete. He's a guy who's run 30.04 and he lives out in Gisborne. He went through a bit of a bad patch of training for a while, or even racing, where he was killing it for ages. Like, he ran 30.04. He towed me up at Run for the Kids. And I thought, who is this bloke? This bloke is never seen him before. And he's in the front of the Albert Park 10K, just on the front driving the train. He kind of shocked a lot of people. But then he disappeared for a little bit. We didn't see him for a while. And then he had a couple of track races and he's starting to get back. He did a session with me and he was very comfortable doing it. He comes from Gisborne, so he just drove down the highway and jumped in with me for Tuesday night. We had the same session. So 3x K, 253, 252, 251 with decent rest, 3 minutes, and then just a little bit quicker on some 500s after it. So that I added a K to a previous session I'd done and got a little bit quicker too, and then the 500s again quicker. But the main thing was that I felt a lot better doing that, and that was probably because Charlie was there helping us out. We took turns in pacing it out, so that was really nice to have a partner.
Generous rest, Brad. What are your comments on that?
I like it.
Old track boy.
Yeah, I like it because his focus is not a marathon at the moment. So, I agree.
So the idea behind having longer rest is I can hit the paces I need to. So, and the paces I need to, for me, there is around trying to get to around a 5K pace.
Yeah, I was just about to ask that question. Is that 5K pace?
That's what I'm working towards. So I can't run 3x K at 5K pace off 30 seconds at the moment. This is goal 5K pace. So I need to have more rest to achieve that. And then I probably could do 6x1K at that, but I shouldn't yet because it would cook me too much. So I did 500s instead, so I don't get as tired or worn out from that session. But I do pick the pace up a little. So that was a good session. We came away from that pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I reckon when your slowest K is 253 for the night, it's a pretty decent session.
Yeah, there's only three of them, so it was good. Like, we felt good. The main thing was that we felt just cruisy. So that's always the goal of the sessions. I always want to come away feeling like I was comfortable. And then, Wednesday, just a couple of runs, had a run club and then a morning run, bit of climbing on the morning run. Thursday, listened to your podcast with Tim, the park run fella.
Tim O'Berg, Did you like it?
Yep. Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty good. Then some hill sprints. Felt pretty shit that day, actually. And I think this is when I started to talk to Brad, or maybe both of you, and said, gee, just finish awful right now. And then went to Radford Friday morning. Saturday, had a good session. In the morning, went down to Vic Park, which is like a big, I did a lot of marathon stuff there. Good open space to do a lot of work on a road. And the boys, Dolce and Watto, were there. They were going more 330 pace for their tempo. And I didn't want to do a really heavy session, so I did 15 minutes with them at 330. Then I cranked it down to 319s. For 15 minutes, and then the last 15 were at 311s, and I was working pretty hard towards the end there, but 45 minutes and I averaged 319, so that was a good session for me. I did that. That's the hard way to do that, I reckon, rather than running 319s for 45 minutes. I think it's harder to kick it down. And Sunday had a really good long run out in the bush, climbed 480 meters, which is pretty decent climbing. And yeah, surprisingly, we were rolling a bit faster than I thought we were. So that was a real contrast to the long run the week before, where I felt absolutely shit house. So yeah, it's been a good week for me.
Yeah, what kind of mileage you hit at the end of that?
That's 170.
Yeah, good week. I like that tempo. I like that. Those ones, as you said, are harder than sitting at the same pace for 45 minutes, but it still breaks up, gives you something to look forward to when you change the pace.
Yeah, and then it's windy. So, you know, every time you go into a strong headwind, slightly uphill, that's when you're supposed to start kicking it down. Like, and you're running along pretty, like, I think I was 319s uphill into a headwind, and all of a sudden you watch beeps and you go, damn, I've got to take 10 seconds off this K. And you're pretty much strung out as it was. You got to kind of be patient and relax a little bit. And then as soon as you get to some downhill or some tailwind, you can start to fire. But yeah, I spent the first like 3 minutes of that last rep uphill and into the wind.
That's rough.
And I think when you're doing a solid 45-minute tempo at the back end of the week and, you know, your long run, you can get away with that quicker session on the Tuesday with longer recoveries, because you're still ticking the boxes for your threshold-type stuff later in the week.
Yeah, you're covering the bases, yeah.
Yeah, I said it last week. I reckon you've got a really good mix at the moment between the speed, the strength, and your overall volume as well. You just got to keep on top of your body.
Yeah, and that's still, like, it hasn't improved. It just hasn't got worse. Just a couple little niggles. Got some plantar fasciitis in my right foot, and some sort of weird tendon-y thing going on behind my knee. So they're not stopping me running. They're not affecting my workouts. They're just a bit grumpy every now and then.
Mm. Cut some holes in the back, bottom of your shoe, I reckon. That's what I'm recommending.
Yeah, next step.
Let it air out a bit down there. My week was pretty nice week as well. I did 16K Monday morning, 4:35s, 6K in the afternoon Monday, 4:40s. Tuesday I did a session, so I did 15K, 10K at 3:25 pace into 5K at 15:40, so... felt a bit uncomfortable at that 3:25 pace, but then once I got rolling at the 3:12s to kind of 3:10 stuff, I felt much better finishing it off. So that was a nice 15K tempo, averaging 3:19 for the whole thing. But yeah, as you said before, Julian, probably did it the hard way. It would have been much easier to just do 15K at 3:19 rather than running 10 of it slower and then working it down. Out for an easy 8K in the afternoon, had a bit of a proof listen to Emily Brigacek's interview that Brad conducted last week, which is always good to get those interviews early and hear them in full. Wednesday did my long run for the week because I was racing the Hobart half marathon. So I did 32K 4:27 average, which was good. Bit under 130 for the heart rate. So that was pleasing. Thursday morning did 2 hours. I had a couple of guys I coached doing 4x5K with a 1K float. So they were doing that one there, preparing for Wangaratta Marathon, and their pace was similar pace that I'd jog at. So around that, you know, 4:20 to 4:40-ish, we averaged 4:44 all up and progressed those 5Ks for those boys as we went. So that was nice to have some company for 2 hours. Friday started my taper, so what did I do? 4x1 minute strides, that was nice, with a 1 minute float in between. Had Friday afternoon off and got a massage. Saturday did an easy half an hour and then flew to Hobart, and then Hobart half marathon on Sunday, which got fourth in 67 minutes and 39 seconds. So 3:12 average, wore the heart rate monitor and tried to keep things. I didn't look at it as I was going, but had that mentality in the race that it was a hard training session, and found myself in a really good group with David Thomas, Dave Crinitti, and Zach Newman. There were three guys out in front, Nick Earl and Liam Adams. Liam went from the front, and Nick Earl had the attitude to stay on him for as long as possible, so they were well out in front. I think they went through 10K in 30 minutes and 10 seconds, and Hugh was in no man's land obviously running quicker than our group. And yeah, I just tried to surge a bit up the hills, and I just kept, it was actually an interesting race. Like, there was four pretty tough runners. I think all those guys are pretty tough, and there was a few interesting surges up and down some of the hills, and I just kept cutting myself deals. So it was an out and back course, and I kind of thought, well, if this still feels good at the halfway, that's good, just hang in for the halfway. And then we did the U-turn, and then I just looked down at my stopwatch, which was on my watch screen, and just thought, well, just see if you can stay with these guys to 45 minutes, but if it gets too hot, just back it up, just keep it in fourth gear. And got to 45 minutes, and Zacha had dropped off at that stage, and I was kind of sitting pretty with the two Daves. And yeah, then I just said to myself, get to 55 minutes, and yeah, I was at 55 minutes and still felt cruisy. And the way that race goes, I'm not sure if you boys have run it before, but the last K is like a probably 600 meter climb, and then it flattens out to a 400 meter straight. And I just thought, well, I reckon if I'm still with these guys at the top of this hill, I can burn them off. And yeah, he got to the top of the hill with him and kicked it into fifth gear, and yeah, finished pretty strong. And maybe got Dave by 2 seconds, Dave Thomas by 2 seconds, and Dave Crinitti by maybe 4 in the end. So a nice little hit out, and kind of straight into the warm down, which felt comfortable doing kind of 5Ks, and pulled up really well. So, and even the heart rate data, like, averaged 164, which is pretty positive on a hilly course like that. And it was just really fun. I haven't had that much fun in a race for a while, and I think maybe a bit having no pressure on was a bit to do with that. And yeah, well organized, and they looked after us well down there, and some good people hooking around. So that was my week, 160 k's, and I'm well, as we record this, I'm about 3.5 weeks from this Japanese marathon, which is, yeah, starting to get exciting.
So what's your big session coming up before the marathon?
I've got don't ask me off the top of my head. I do have 5x5K in there somewhere. I'm opening an email now. And I'm going to try, we've got a 3 hour long run in the plan. Have you guys ever done 3 hours? Like 3 hours slow, like 4:30s?
No, 2 hours 40 has been my longest.
Yeah, Moose, you
ever I've done, it? Yeah, well over. I've done 50K before. Yeah, plenty of times actually.
Yeah, right. Is that like one of your staples to do that for a marathon, like a 50K?
No, ultras. When I've been training for ultras. Yeah. But I don't think it's bad to go over distance. I think over distance runs are good.
I'm not sure that I'll actually do over distance, but I'll just do over time pretty dramatically. I don't think 3 hours at 4:30s will get me a marathon.
No, it probably won't. No, it's not
4:17s.
Yeah, so four hours. I mean, 3 hour run ain't a big deal, really. Like, Watto does them with us every Sunday, and we were just discussing the merits of them. We think that more people should do three-hour long runs, and I think I always try to do 40K runs or plus. It shouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it takes that mentality about, you know, 40. I think you said in the Road to Berlin, like, 42 is just a number for you. It doesn't mean
no,
a lot of the time. Yeah. Brad, to answer your question though, yeah, I'm just looking ahead. Yeah, next Tuesday got like a 24k kind of change pace tempo one, and then the Tuesday after that, which I'm going to hit some trouble with that because it's the first day back at school, so I'm not going to be, I'm having Tuesdays off work this year, but because Tuesday's the first day with the kids, I'm gonna have to work that Tuesday. So, yeah, but, you know, I'm pretty confident. Like, I'm confident of going in a bit underdone, and off the back of my 10K at Steigen and that 67:39 feeling like it was a decent training session, not like a gut-running kind of race, that I'm in at least good enough shape to get me through the first half of it at a reasonable pace.
Yeah. And just quickly, what was your thinking, basically two long runs back-to-back during the week? You went, 32K and then 2 hours the next day.
First bit of thinking was because I was going to miss the one on the Sunday. So we were fully thinking that this is still a training week. It's not a race week. So hence the reason I still hit 160K. So we thought it was more important that I had a long run in the legs. And it was just a coincidence, actually. My coach didn't give me 2 hours on the Thursday, but the program I wrote for those two guys, and I thought I'll jump in that. And actually, because we were going at a bit of a slower pace, like 4:45s, I didn't realize it was actually going to be 2 hours, but yeah. And I think it probably showed in the performance on Sunday that it didn't take much out of me. Still to get the mileage in and, focus on the marathon in 3.5 weeks. So that's it. So looking forward to it. Yeah, just happy with that. Boys, there's about a million different news articles this week. I think we had like one last week or the week before, and I reckon we've got maybe, at a quick glance, 10 different races or significant running news to report on. But we might start it off, and Brad, you're going to go through the big news that dropped today. The Commonwealth Games marathon team has finally been released.
Yeah, and as well as a few 10K spots as well. Nice. So we'll start off with the women's marathon. We've got Jin Maloney, Lisa Waitman, and Jess Trengrove. So any real surprises there, boys? Pretty standard?
I think Jin's a bit of a surprise because that was the one everyone was wondering. Well, not a surprise, but that was the one that I was wondering if she'd be the one or not, because I think Lisa and Jess had locked their spots in, but we weren't sure what Celia was going to do or Millie Clark, and there was a bit of question over that third spot. But yeah, I've had Jin on my podcast Tell Me Your Tales twice, and she's awesome to talk to, and yeah, so stoked that she got the call up.
And so then the men's, there was really no surprises here. It was Liam Adams, Chris Hamer, and Michael Shelley, and I actually just got off the phone with Chris Hamer, and he will be our guest next week. So having a run with him next Wednesday and then breakfast. So I'm looking forward to that. So that's the men's.
I'm looking forward to that interview. Like, he's a guy that not a lot of people know a lot about. So that this will be his first in-depth interview ever.
Yeah, and even on the phone tonight, I said, you know, like, the guy qualified for the last Comm Games and then had to pull out with injury, was unlucky not to make the last World Cross team. So, shows sort of he's really persisted and, good on him. So, and then the 10K, we've got Pat Tin and Stewie McSween have been selected, and Celia Sullivan is our female representative at the moment. And obviously, there'll probably be another few people added to that later on down the track. So, it was very exciting today.
Yeah, good news. No surprises there. Two past guests, Pat and Stewie. So, we've got quite a few. Liam, yeah, a few different guys there that have been on, all coming on in the coming weeks. Julian, kick us off. The World Half Marathon team was also announced, the Australian team. And I was a bit disappointed they actually announced this one before the Comm Games team, because I think it took a lot of the guessing out, and it was pretty obvious who was going to make the Comm Games team in the end after we read this team. But good news for quite a few people.
Yeah, well, it's almost like an overflow list for some of them anyway. Girls that didn't get selected for the marathon at Comm Games, they got selected. If they nominated for the World Half, then they probably got selected. So the three ladies will go over. Millie Clark has had a great, almost like a breakout performance at the World Half a couple of years ago, will be there. She ran 70 minutes something the year she was there. I reckon off the top of my head may have finished 13th. That's just I should have researched that. But I think she came 13th and ran 70 minutes something. So she goes back to kind of revisit some good memories. Sinead Diver. Sinead is, what is she, an Irish chick who's run for Australia now? So she's done, obviously we've seen her over the marathon really well. I've seen her run a few 5Ks even, and jumping on the track a bit.
And showing age is no barrier as well.
Yeah, she's really strong. And then Ali Pashley, not sure why they... She must still be registered under her old name. But she, Ali, ran 73-minute half up on the Gold Coast, 2:35 at Berlin. So I reckon they may have picked Ali based on maybe her potential over for the next few years, give her a bit of championships experience at the half. And she sent us through a course map, and it's a very flat race. It should be pretty good conditions for them to run fast there.
What about as coach? You were pretty happy to see that one come through? Australian
congratulations,
rep.
Congratulations,
yeah.
Coach.
Big news.
Oh, like I said to everyone, if she actually – like, I get to call myself a coach when she listens to half the stuff that I tell her, and we haven't reached that point yet. So when she starts doing half the stuff I tell her, then I can be the coach.
I reckon – don't you get, like, a different accreditation if you have, like, someone go to the World Championships as the coach?
What, you mean, like
– like, if – yeah, like, if you were registered, like, Athletics Australia coach, you'd be able to be, like, level four now or whatever because you've got an Australian representative in your stable.
Really?
Yeah. It's official. Like, people try and poach athletes who are going to make – like, who are on teams because it makes them go up a level as a coach.
Oh, not well, that, I'm not registered I'm as a coach, though.
You're probably not even registered as level one, but you could be like...
No. Yeah, I am the least qualified coach. Yeah. No one should be searching. Like, I have no qualifications.
Is that why she doesn't listen to you?
Probably. She's probably got a level one coach out there who's actually telling her what to do properly. Someone who went and spent the day at AV learning about, I don't know, whatever you learn about coaching courses. I don't know what you learn about. The men, they're actually taking, I'm not sure why, but they're taking five people. So, yeah, I don't know whether more people nominated or what happened there. So Collis Birmingham, I don't know what the Australian half marathon record is. There's a bit of discrepancy over that, I believe. But he's got a claim to one of the times there, I think. Doesn't he?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but like Magamin or something like that over in Japan.
Yeah, it was Japanese run.
60 low, I think. I'm Googling it right now. 60-56. But there's an unofficial one from Steve Modighetti at the – oh, hang on. Geez, we're good at research on Inside Running Podcast.
And Pat Carroll's got a time
Darren
too.
Wilson as well.
Yeah, Steve Modighetti's in there. Darren Wilson, yeah, at Tokyo, half marathon, 60.02, Mona 60.08, Mona 60.27, Mona 60.34. But then Collis has got the official record because the course was, Monas was at Great North Run.
Great North Run, which is net downhill, yeah.
So how come Darren Wilson's isn't official? He's got a little A next to his name. What does that mean? I'm scrolling.
Where was that run at?
Tokyo Half Marathon.
I'm not sure about that, actually. I'm not sure.
I think that is the record, isn't it?
Darren Wilson.
I think that's the official one.
So why is
Collis even listed?
Yeah, I've heard. I actually thought that Collis. I've heard it claimed somewhere before. But anyway, we'll sort this out and we'll report back next week on the official clarification.
But someone research it and then tell everyone.
Yeah, maybe that can be a listener thing.
The listener question is from Brad.
I've got plenty of time on my hands at the moment, so I'll look into it for you.
Yeah, good on you. So Collis is running one of the best half marathoners we've ever had, put it that way. Probably not in like amazing shape at the moment, but has time to get fit and has the potential to be very fit. Same with Brett Robinson, who paced a half in Japan very well a few weeks ago and is stepping in. He's won the last two Melbourne half marathons quite convincingly, and I reckon he's done it off more tempo effort as well. So it'll be very exciting to see what Brett Robinson does. Harry Summers, who he's hot or cold, basically. He could come out and he's amazingly strong on the roads as well. And then Dejan Gebrselassie, who has potential as well. Again, pretty hot or cold. He's had some good races over summer. He's had some shockers too. So hopefully he pulls it together for the half. And then Thomas DeCanto, who ran his 2:14:59, wasn't it? Something high.
Yep.
2:14 high. And I reckon he's a bit of overflow from from the Com Games, and they're giving him a bit of a exposure to a World Champs event, which is, or a world level event, which is good because he might be running a marathon for Australia one day.
Well, there's listeners probably out there going, if this overflow rule's enforced, how come the Moose hasn't got his name on the list?
Oh, mate, I'm way down, way down. Plus, well, I never
you'd be next
nominated.
In line, wouldn't you? I didn't fill out the form.
Nah, I'm not even expecting this. Like, I was, Ash, Watto and I were running along this morning just laughing at the thought of if it was back when Cole Reavy got picked, who was maybe like 10 seconds or something faster than I was, laughing at the fact that I would have been in the mix to run at the World Championships. And I said to him, I'm like, I don't think I, like, this isn't right. I'm like, the World Championships should be the best in the world. It shouldn't be, geez, Australia's sending, like, this guy. Anyway.
Yeah, but then you can look at it from the other point of view. And the thing that I really like about this World Half Marathon team is there's been years where guys have – there's been 63-minute half marathoners and they haven't sent them. So I like that Athletics Australia is actually sending full teams. I think it's great. It's great for the sport.
I think full teams are good, but they still should be justified. Like, just because someone gets a qualifier, I don't think that means that they should – that guarantees them a spot in the team. Because if, for instance, the 2.8, if I ran that time, my marathon time, in that World Champs year, and say Cole Reavy wasn't there, I know there's a lot of if and hypotheticals, even if Joshy Harris wasn't there that year,
friend of
I would
the show.
Be thinking, yeah, friend of the show, like, I would be debating whether I would be going to that team based on my, like, I just don't think that...
You are kidding me. As if you're going to turn down a start at World Champs because you don't think you're good enough. Jack Cole Reavy was our fastest finisher that day with like a 2:21.50 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Things can happen, I know, but maybe I just haven't accepted that yet. But for me, like, it was just a novelty. I think it's nice to have a qualifier there for people to aim at, but I still think that teams should be sent. I think everyone needs to be assessed. There should be a proper assessment done on the athlete and their actual potential when they're selected in a team. It shouldn't just be like, oh, you've run under the qualifier, here's your kit, well done. I think it should be like, okay, well, how's this? I think there should be some reflection on Australia if we are sending two or three 2:18 guys to a World Championships marathon event.
I have heard on this World Half team that there may be an appeal in place. I did hear a whisper of that during the week. Something came across my desk. Don't know anything about it. You boys heard anything?
No.
Well, you know about it. You're telling me
I'm
about
saying,
it.
I'm saying, yeah, so... I've heard a whisper. Cannot disclose it. Got delivered to my house, opened the mailbox and come across my desk, but that's all I can say at this stage. But
women's or men's?
Men's. I think the women's is pretty set. I think, well, they've only sent three for starters. So, but the men's
okay,
team.
Okay, so on the men's side, who's got a claim there? Brad Milosevic?
Yeah, well, you're throwing names out, mate. I'm just here and there could be an appeal in place. But I'm interested that.
It'd have to be him or Cole Reavy, I reckon.
Yeah, you could be right there, Brad. But you're saying that, like, investigating current forms, an interesting point that you brought up because. You know, Dejan Gabrielselassie ran, 10 seconds quicker than you at Steigen, 10K. He ran at Zatopek, maybe a 29 high. I know he's got...
He ran a 14.25. No, 14... What did he run at the 5K? It wasn't very fast. And then also the 5K at Big Champs was slow too. So,
yeah. And his Zatopek was, a tick under and 30 minutes. And the Harry Summers went into Zatopek as a favourite, kind of did a ripping run over in Japan, but then didn't show. And I'm like, okay, we're picking these guys, or picking him in particular, to go over and represent Australia in Spain, but you can't find your way to the start line at Zatopek. Like, it's just a bit of unpredictability there that just worries me a bit. That, yeah, I think Brett Robinson and Collis has obviously proven record that they're another cut above the rest.
Well, with Collis, you kind of, you can't not pick Collis. Even though his form's not amazing now, he's got enough credit in the bank where you pick him. It's like playing your old, like, proven warrior, like, it's playing Stuart Dew on Grand Final Day or something like that. You know the guy is going to come out and just have, or he could pull it out on Grand Final Day because he's been there before. He knows the system and he's got potential. He's relaxed. He's going to lead the team well too. I think probably like five guys.
Well, he's also got time, what you said as well. He's got time to get in shape, and we know what shape he can get into when he puts
his potential higher than everyone else's there, definitely.
Nearly any of those five guys could be the top Australian on the day, though. Like, there's a bit of unpredictability about all their performances, I think. Maybe not Tom Decano. Not sure if he's got what's his
I don't know about that. PB. I'd say Brett Robinson would be a favourite going into that race.
The next bit of news, we're still talking about marathon stuff here, and this comes from the Gold Coast Marathon during the week, and my eyes lit up, Brad, when I saw this one. Gold Coast Marathon, $40,000 cash bonus to any Australian male who can run under 2 hours and 10 minutes. That's not why my eyes lit up. And any female who could run under 2 hours and 28 minutes at their Gold Coast Marathon event, first weekend in July 2018. If more than one Australian does it in either of the categories, they split the prize money between, depending on how many people go under. It brings up an interesting conversation because it's only 10 weeks between the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games Marathon and the Gold Coast actual marathon. So is it too close for our Commonwealth Games team to have a crack at it, you reckon, boys?
No.
Well, Trengrove did it last year, didn't she? She went to the World Champs. So she did the London Marathon and then she went to the World Champs at London, which was pretty similar turnaround and ran well at both.
Yeah, it probably depends how much it takes out. Obviously, you've got to work it out. But you have 1 to 2 weeks recovery, 1 to 2 weeks rebuild, and then you've got 6 weeks to roll it out. So it can be done, especially if it's like Lisa Waitman, who's run 3 minutes faster than that time already, she could go that and run whatever it is, 95% of her current PB and still pick up 40 grand plus prize money. That's not bad.
Well, that's the thing. You can nearly win it. Like, if you're going to go out and run 2:27 dead, what did that lady that we paced last year, Brad? For people that don't know, Brad and I paced the second fastest marathon ever on Australian soil other than this in the Olympics last year when Azabesh, what was her name? Bikili, Brad?
Azabesh.
Your mate.
Yeah, Azabesh Afterwork Bikili.
She ran about 2:25:40, didn't she?
Yeah, 2:25 or 2:26, something like that.
Take her out of it, though. The next time wouldn't have been under 2:28. So someone like Lisa could go there, you run 2:27 dead, you pick up 40 grand, and you pick up 12 grand for first prize, you just got paid 52 grand.
Bad. Yeah.
Cash money.
Because it's definitely set up more for the girls because the guys, it's 2:10. So you wouldn't imagine there's many guys that are even really going to contemplate that, especially when you take out our Commonwealth Games marathoners.
Yeah, well, let's just say on the chicks or the females for a while. What about Celia Sullivan? She's not named. She's got a quick 2:29 low or mid PB for the marathon in her second marathon when she won Melbourne this year. She's not going to run the marathon at Comm Games. She's going to come off a 10K build-up. Her coach, Scott Westcott, has paced the lead females in the past. Set up nicely for her. I like it.
You sound like a manager. Sounds like you're making it happen.
I think Scott's probably taken that pacemaking job because, I'm happy just to pace the lead female African again. That was good fun last year. But we'll be happy. We'll both be open to negotiations, Brad. You happy with that?
Yeah, definitely. Yep. I've penciled it in. I'll be on the Gold Coast this year doing something.
I'm booking flights. Same thing. I'm just like, if you want, I think our services are good because between the two of us, I'm a bit more relaxed. You take care of the pacing. I'm just a bit looser out there and happy to put in surges at 25 to 30K just to nail some time early. I can give you an update on petrol prices if you want it. We can pass you the drinks, you name it, we can have this sorted. So before Gold Coast comes knocking on our door, we're open to any lead Australian females to get you through to I'll go the whole way, get you through to 42.2.
Well, the girl that won Gold Coast last year, she messaged me on Facebook the other week. I remember, told you boys, so she might be back again.
Yeah, I sent Viv a message when you told me that as well. I was just making sure she's been in the loop with who sends you Facebook messages.
Yeah, she's all right. She's happy.
You thought she was after a passport, didn't you, Julian? A visa or something?
I'm not sure what she was after, actually.
I'm not sure either.
I didn't get a message, I'll tell you what. This was Brad's fine work when he was trying to do a bit of negotiating at the 34.5K mark before we were about to pull out.
She did spend a lot of time running right behind him, so maybe she just liked what she saw.
She's only human.
True, yeah.
The King of Canberra strikes again, you reckon?
Oh, he's done some damage. This
might be after a ticket to the AIS.
All right, what's next in news?
Boston Marathon Elite Field is announced, and although it was loaded, we covered the American Elites a couple of weeks ago, and I liked how they actually announced the American ones before they release the whole field. That's a good move for the locals. But, not going to be easy for the American male or females. It is deep. There's 3 204 guys in the marathon, a handful of guys, 205, 26s, 27s. Galen Rupp comes in at probably the 15th seed off the top of my head, just trying to do some counting here. Can he win it?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if he'll win it, but it's like he'll have to run faster than what he's run previously, I reckon, to win.
They don't have pacemakers, though, do they? Like, even though these guys are 204 guys, it's not going to be 204.
Not at Boston, they don't.
No, but also think with Boston, over the last few years, they haven't invited as many internationals as they've got this year. I'm pretty sure in the last few years it's been predominantly US runners with maybe one or two internationals. But this year they've actually, loaded the fields. So it should be a really good race.
Yeah, certainly will be. Our man Yuki's in there. He's in there. Galen Rupp, Reid Coolset, the Canadian. There's some fast guys.
What about the women's? Like, it's like US women. Like Jordan, Hasse, Flanagan, Desi Linden.
You're missing the winner. You haven't said her name yet. There it goes. Molly Huddle.
The winner.
I'm calling it now, guys, because it's going to lead into our next bit of news. But she's just banged out a nice 67.25 new American record. And she's good on the roads, isn't she? Huddle, doesn't she just dominate them over there?
Yeah.
Very rarely gets beaten.
Mm. And she's ran one marathon at New York, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but New York, not a fast course. But, I reckon she could do some damage in this race.
Agreed.
It'll be interesting. I love Boston. I just can't wait to watch it. Boston will be very nice to watch. Like, it's always a good race to watch because it's a race. Mm. It's not like pacemakers, how long do they hold on for? It's where are the surges happening? Like, I think I mention every time, but read a lot of the old American marathoners' books, like Frank Shorter and Salazar, Boston, Billy Rogers, and they're just like great races, guys surging up hills through the Newton Hills, just like toe-to-toe boxing matches in a marathon. It's just great to read about. It's exciting running. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, that's 12 girls quicker than Brad's PB for the marathon in there. Fastest 2:09.
That's not too hard.
I'm not saying that. I think I could be the slowest marathoner on this podcast in about 8 weeks, so I don't want to chuck myself under the bus too much, but there's quite a few quicker than me as well. It's deep, four sub-220 girls, going to be good to watch, and Boston always puts on a good show. What are we doing, boys? Let's stick with Houston. Someone tell me about Houston. We just touched on Molly Huddle, but this is another deep race we've just had on the weekend.
Houston, yeah. So Houston was a half marathon, always fast there. I think they get pretty good conditions normally. And I don't know, they must pay some money because they get some athletes go there. So the guy who pushed Kipchoge in Berlin was running. He came second again. So he was second to Jake Robertson, one of those white boys living in Kenya from New Zealand. If you follow them on Instagram, quite funny. They think they're like American gangsters and they dress like it, act like it. Sam talk like it. It's hilarious. I love following them. But they are legitimate gun runners, and they are changing. I guess they're the white guys competing now. So they remind me a lot of Mottram when he was doing the fives and the 15 3Ks when he was pushing the top guys. That's what these Robertson twins are doing now, along with Sondre, Christian's Owen. Mate from Norway.
Yeah,
Sondre Moen. Yep. So this Jake Robertson has run 60.01, out kicking some of the best guys in the world. He flew over, I think, like, it's actually really interesting. He was only confirmed in the race late, so I guess his agent was working to secure some sort of arrangement, and it got it late. He got obviously got paid to go over economy, and he's forked out his own money to upgrade to business. And so the idea being, like, I'm guessing, is that he wanted to get off the plane after having slept all night, which is a really smart idea. Like, I love that. He's gone, I'm taking this so seriously, and I know that I'm going to perform better if I sleep, so I'm going to dump a bit of cash to sleep all night, wake up, can run off the plane, and just be on the start line, like, 100% rather than being maybe, like, 97% if he didn't get a proper sleep the night before. So, yeah, he's running like Biwar against Bradley and
Croker versus Robertson.
Yeah, I'm gonna prove that you don't need to fly business class.
You're not flying business.
What are you calling exactly. It out, Brad?
Yeah.
All right. Good luck with that one. Only 15 seconds off the New Zealand record as well, which his twin brother actually holds.
Yeah, it's insane. So I think these boys, or at least one of them, are getting coached by Renato Canova. The Italian coach.
Nah, this one's self-coached now. I read that today.
Which one? Jake?
Jake, yeah. He's got his own crew in Kenya, whereas Zane's in Ethiopia.
Oh, shit, okay. Oh, well, that's going on. Maybe he's just copying his sessions. Send the program through.
Not running com
Renato
games.
Sends it through. What's that?
Not running com games, but I do like the like BY decision. He was getting a bit of flack on it on a couple of forums I was reading today, but send him to like BY and win it in like 208, 209. Like, it's much better than going London and going out at world record pace and just blowing to pieces.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, what are your thoughts on him skipping com games? To do BY.
Well, I think he wouldn't have a qualifier for the marathon. And they're qualified.
But this guy would have a qualifier in something, 10K or something. But he's a professional athlete. He's like obviously needs these races to survive and to pay his rent or his mortgage or his groceries, his food. There's no prize money at Com Games. Why would he make the decision to run for Com Games?
And he's been out of Kenya he's been out of New Zealand for a long time, so I'm not sure if a Com Games medal means much if he's not. I don't think he's got local New Zealand sponsors, and he's probably not sponsored by his local, you know, Wellington Bowling Club or whatever it is. But yeah, I don't know how much a Com Games medal means for him money-wise compared to winning big city races like Houston.
Well, it would mean I don't think it would stack up, given he's in a position where he has to pay his mortgage, and you can't melt that metal down and you can't sell that New Zealand singlet to pay your mortgage, basically. And I don't think the Com Games is held in the same regard. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it's held in the same regard as, say, the Olympics or the World Championships. I think they're the two. I think the Com Games is third in line, maybe even fourth in line behind world cross country for Australian athletes, or for Australian New Zealand athletes. That's what I'm not sure, but that's how I read it anyway.
Mm. And just back to that half marathon again, like, there's some amazing stats. I don't know who put these ones on our agenda for the night, but 37 men ran under 65 minutes and 10 women under 70. And even Molly Huddle, she goes out and breaks the American record, runs 67.25, and she comes seventh overall.
It's a good feeling. It's a good race.
She broke the US 10-mile and 20K records on the way as well.
Yeah. Well, the girl, the lady who actually won it, she was hunting me down in the final 200 metres at Berlin. She was second and ran 2:20.20. So, she's racing quality. You know, if she's up there with those ladies who are running 2:20 low, it's good signs going into Boston. And the other American, Jordan Hussey, she came in at, I'm not sure what position overall, but she was 68 minutes.
One behind. Yeah.
So
there's a minute between them, though,
68.38. Pretty deep races over there. I'd love to go run that half marathon one year. You just go with the lead females, wouldn't you? Hang on.
I don't know. See.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get back.
Hobart Marathon. Let's talk about Hobart.
Yeah, I was there. Dane Verwey, my man, the guest for the week. I've had a bit to do with Dane over the years, and we're talking about, he's been running for about 20 years. He started when he was 10 and he's 30-something now. And, he won his first marathon, 2:24.54. Dion Finocchiario. I didn't pronounce that right. I'm sorry, Dion. He listens to the show every week. 2:25.02. And Samuel Gabrimichael, 2:25.35. So not much separated the boys. I was at about 1,500 metres to go. I saw the boys and they were together. Dano had maybe a 2 metre break, and Dion took over the lead with about a K to go, and then Dane just really went into fifth gear and went into beast mode and just had a massive finish. So good to see those boys down there. Pretty competitive race. I'm thinking that's good for the Hobart Marathon. They'd be pleased with a close result and a fast time for that, because it's usually a bit slower than that. Gemma Jenkins won the ladies in 2:51, Melanie McDonald second, 2:57. And Rachel Glasson in 2:57, also only 18 seconds behind Melanie. So pretty close there for the minor places. Half marathon, Liam Adams, 64 minutes, 44 seconds. Nick Earl, 65 minutes, 21, after going with Liam for as long as possible. And I probably think the most impressive run of the day was Hugh Williams' first half marathon. He goes out and runs 65.57, hilly course on his debut. Literally time trialled it, didn't have anyone run for the whole 21K. So good to see Hugh back running well. Miriam Dowie, who I had on Tell Me Your Tales the other week, pretty inspirational young lady, won the females in 76.35. Charlotte Wilson was second in 80 minutes and 57 seconds. And Kylie Smith, an hour, 31 minutes and 34 seconds. So not a lot of depth in the females. I was looking at the results of the females and looking at the results of the males and thinking, you know, the top six, seven guys in the males were under 68 minutes, yet the third female wasn't under 90 minutes. So
is that the organiser? Because I know the organisers take a lot of people, help out a lot of male athletes. Like, where are the female athletes there helping out? Because those marathon times aren't fast. And those half times, like 1:31 to come third at a major city half, That's really slow.
4:30 Ks. And it paid down a third. I actually thought it paid down a fifth. So I'm at the bottom. When I've come fourth in this race before and got some prize money. So I'm at the bottom of this hill with a K to go. I know there's three guys in front of me, and I'm like, right, we've got fourth, fifth, and sixth here. Someone ain't getting prize money. So here's me absolutely hammering the last 200 metres trying to win some prize money in fourth. And then I get told they're only paying down a third this year. But felt like Julian going to Aubrey for a fun run.
I still got money.
Yeah, I know. You got much more than me. And so you're asking the question, where are the elite females? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, why aren't they getting flown over?
I think you just gotta apply. Like, you pretty much just fill out a form on the website and contact the race director Richard Welsh and say you want to have a run. So I'm assuming that he wasn't contacted by anyone.
I don't know. But it's weird that it didn't happen.
Who's there? Like, I guess there's a lot of females training. Like, our top, the depth obviously isn't there as much in the females as it is the males, and we've got a lot of them preparing for Comm Games and World Half, and I'm not sure if there's that many of them who go around. Certainly quicker than, 90 minutes, but Yeah, Maddie Hills was there, though. She won the 10K, 33 minutes, 57 seconds. Olympian finalist over the 3K steeplist and the 5K, so maybe the 10K as well. So it was good to see her there. But, yeah, it was a good weekend, well organised. The course is challenging and got a stack of chocolate when you finish, which is always good. But, yeah, I thought the same thing. I probably picked the wrong race to be in. But, yeah, great to see Dane get the win. It was interesting because all those three boys were kind of saying it was going to be a bit of a training run, and Dane speaks about it a bit in the interview, like a hard hit out for marathons later on in the year. And, yeah, then they come home in 2:24. Toby Rayner, people might recognise his name, a 29 low guy. He was with the lead pack early but unfortunately pulled out at 23K. So, yeah, a few individual stories coming out of Hobart. And the other race locally, Brad, was up your way, New South Wales 10K champs.
Yeah, so that was held up in Newcastle. That was won by Matt Cox. He ran 31-31. And Celia Sullivan won the women's in 32-56. So wasn't a lot of depth. And probably cause normally they hold that at the New South Wales champs, which is in a few weeks in Sydney. But this year they held it separately in Newcastle, and I guess a lot of people decided not to travel for it. So, so that was that. And I guess the other just bit of news quickly is Michael Shelley ran a half over in Doha, finishing fourth in 63.17, which had a deep field. You know a little bit more about that, Brady?
Yeah, well, I'd never heard of the race before, but it just checking social media, it was like every man and their dog was over there. Mo Farah was putting on Instagram flat out how he was going over there. Chris Thompson from the UK, pretty deep field over there. But, yeah, it was kind of a lot of talk, but nothing really happened. I was expecting maybe a sub-60-minute half marathon, and Farah didn't start, complaining about tightness in his calves. I reckon I'm putting it down to tightness in his big finger because he was doing way too much Instagramming and not too much running over there. But, yeah, kind of a good race. I'm assuming those boys are on big money appearance fees to be heading to Doha on a Friday for a half marathon for an event that isn't really massive on the world scale. But that's solid for Shelley leading into the Gold Coast Con Games.
Yeah, it's a good result.
And the other local race, Moose, was Mountain Surf.
Mountain Surf, always gets a good field. 7.5K down there. Very solid field this week, or this year. So we had the Olympian, Colas Birmingham, getting beaten by Andy Buchanan. Low 29, 10K from Zatopek, wasn't it?
29-12, I think, yep.
Yeah, so very good runner and pretty stiff to rock up being an Olympian and get pipped down at a local fun run. Third, Nick Whiteman. Fourth, Brenton Rowe. Fifth, sixth, seventh, I'm not exactly sure. But then Blake, our mate from this podcast, he came eighth. And the Fast Boys, they put the burners on him a bit early and probably ran him off his legs a little. So, it was a good race. That's one you got to get to if you ever like fun runs. Love it down there. Really fun event. You go to the pub afterwards. Oh, wait. No, you used to go to the pub. It used to be at night and now it's in the morning. So you can still go to the pub.
Ali Pashley, your run strong. She won
So Ali won.
Don't leave her off. She wins everything, Ali.
Unbeknown to me that she was running, she went down and had a good win.
Wasn't in her program.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Forgot to tell you about that one. It's all right.
Let's wrap up that news because I don't think we'll ever have that much news again, but hopefully the listeners got a bit out of that. We're just going to nail a really quick listener question this week, and Brad's got to answer this one because we're all going to have exactly the same answer, but it came in from Rod McQueen. He said he loves the podcast. Could you guys please blast through a few definitions and explanations of the different running specific terms you are always throwing around? For example, when you do a 1 minute float, what does that actually mean? Because he's a bit worried that his shoes have got wet recently. So Brad, what's a float mean when you're doing training sessions?
Well, the wise man probably knows the correct terminology, but I guess when you do an interval session, you've got the option to sort of stand around and do nothing in the recovery. Whereas a float, I would say is, and we'll use monofartlek for an example. So the interval would be slightly above your anaerobic threshold, and the float would be slightly slower. So for me, it would be running, say, 3 minute Ks for my interval and running 320s for the float. So you're not standing around, you're still moving quite quick. So you're basically producing a bit of lactic acid in the interval, and then you're trying to clear it by slowing down just slightly. So that's sort of my terminology, I guess.
Is a good rule of thumb to slow to your marathon pace a wise man?
Not really. Not if your intervals are at marathon pace and you need to slow it down.
True.
So, no, it's all about taking probably, like, if you look at it on a level system, you probably take it down a pace rung. So, like, I guess a float at marathon pace would go down to steady run or steady pace.
Yeah.
Or not easy pace, but steady. Yeah.
So I guess the other example at the moment would be if I'm doing intervals at marathon pace, so doing 8K at 320s and I'm floating a kilometre recovery, I'd maybe slow down 20, 30 seconds a kilometre.
Yeah.
So you're not basically just standing or slow jogging. You're still moving quite quick, but just enough to get your breath back a bit.
Yeah, you float at about 3:45s. That'd be about right?
Yeah
that's what I should do, yeah.
I'd say 4:10s would still be a float rather than a jog.
Yeah.
There's no set answer for that question. It just means you're not jogging or you're not slowing down to easy pace. You're still working relatively hard.
Yeah. Context is important.
Your heart rate's not going to drop back under 100 sort of thing.
There we go. Hopefully we answered your question there, Rod. Moose on the loose. Let's last segment, and then we're going to finish this one off because this is going to be a long show.
Yeah, quick moose on the loose. So Tuve's is a trail run in it's like Dramana or Cape Shank area down in Victoria. I got labelled as the Victoria's 6 foot track, which it is not. The 6 foot track marathon in New South Wales is prestigious and gets an amazing field every year, and you're always looking at almost Commonwealth Games level runner winning it most years.
Hey, what do you mean mislabeled? Is that what they're doing on their publicity?
No, they didn't do it. It got labeled by another website as this and as that sort of quality of race. And it just isn't really, like, when you look at it. Maybe it was in the past. Maybe they had a few years where there was really good athletes there and it was very deep, but it's not anymore.
Have you won it?
No. There's a 28K and a 56K. I came third in the 28K 1 year to Steve Dineen and Trent Harlow. And then in the 56K, there have been some good winners there. I think Dion Finocchiaro has been a winner there. Maybe even has a record.
Yeah, he was.
So it used to be a very good event, and it's certainly not as deep as it used to be. But this isn't the point of the rant, right?
Okay. This is like the lead-in rant.
That's not the point. That was just like me starting to get worked up, just warming myself up.
Maybe I'm just trying to work up a bit. I just extending the rant.
Yeah, so a good friend of... Well, he's a friend of mine now. He came down to run Gold Rush Trail Run, rocked up in his little racing flats, and he came down and came second to Big Nico Van Rapperhorst. And his name's Matt. Oh, geez, he's got some names. But we call him Max Ueda, and he's from Melbourne Uni. But he's a friendly dude. Everyone loves him. And he's a pretty naive. Like, we had a few chats about trail running. He wants to be the next Killian Jornet, who... is some little trail running nerd in getting around.
Jeez.
But
moves on the booth.
Yeah, I just take the filter off now. But he won the 28K race, right? And according to Strava, he ran it faster than I did, which is 1:50. They had perfect weather, so it was quite cool, actually, like maybe 15 degrees or something. He went through, won the race in 1:50, got disqualified for not carrying a drink bottle with him. like, this is the winner of the race, they've said, no, no, you don't get your prize. You don't get listed. You're disqualified because you don't have a drink bottle. Now, this race isn't in the mountains where conditions can change on a dime and you have to have wet weather gear or you have to have emergency food or space blankets to keep yourself alive. This is a race through the suburbs in more like down on the peninsula where you're never anywhere more than like 5 minutes away from a road and it's 15 degrees and he's running an hour 50. So we ran at 2 hours, something like 2 hours 20 in the bush faster than Maxi did. And we didn't have any water with us on Sunday. Yet this guy's getting disqualified by, and this is the problem with trail running. This is why people look at it as a bit of a, like a joke, or they laugh at it. It's because people get disqualified for not carrying a fucking drink bottle on a less than a 2 hour run. Like, be serious.
Yeah, but when you enter, is the rule that you must carry water?
Like,
hasn't he just not followed the rules?
This is a cupless event. So this is a cupless event, which means if you run along and want a drink from a station, there's no cups there. It also says the drink bottle is mandatory, right? It says that at the start. But, they disqualified him because he didn't follow the rules. I accept that the rules were there and he didn't follow them, but what a stupid rule. Like, if you don't want to drink, that's on you. That shouldn't be getting you disqualified if you don't want to carry a bloody drink bottle. That's, to me, this is unbelievable. And that's why road runners will continue to ignore trail events until they start treating them serious, until they start basically making themselves not look silly like this.
So the moves on the loose is against the rule, not that you got disqualified. The rule shouldn't have been there in the first place. Well, so you reckon they shouldn't have enforced the rule?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't think that's affecting anyone. This guy doesn't carry a drink bottle. All that's happening is he might be slightly disadvantaged because he doesn't get a drink. It's not like him not carrying a drink bottle is the difference between him coming first or coming second. He's not getting an advantage over the second place by not carrying a drink bottle. So I think if you're going to put a rule up that to encourage people to carry a drink bottle, okay, fine. Don't enforce the rule. Jesus, look the other way. These aren't your typical, like, five-hour marathoners. This guy's a great athlete. He's an hour 50. And, yeah, the rules apply to everyone, but it's a lot different being out there 4 hours than it is being out there for an hour 50. Your requirements change. Okay, he has a bad day. He's out there for 2.5 hours. He gets thirsty. The guy, it's 15 degrees. He's not going to die. He does 2.5 hour long runs on a Sunday without water every single week.
Comments, Croker? Got anything?
I do have something. I'm not into trail running whatsoever, but what about from the... But they often run through the bush, right? So often these rules are put from a safety point of view. So, yes, he's won the race in an hour 50, but the rule's there in case he gets lost in the bush.
Okay, and, so he gets lost
in the bush. He's got a drink bottle.
And yeah, it's the middle of January. They have this race here every
year. Fill it up from a dam? Find a puddle? No, it doesn't work like that. You can't drink from puddles.
Didn't you have to have 500 mils worth of water in your drink bottle as well, though?
No. You have to carry. It's mandatory. I think the drink bottle might be, you don't have to have water in it. You just have to carry it.
Ah, so you just clip it onto your belt and empty your drink bottle.
So... Our race, for instance, is a cupless event. So we recommend people carry a drink bottle. Not a chance I'm disqualifying someone for not carrying a drink bottle. Like, it just pisses me off. Like, you want to get good runners there, and then they start reading all this bullshit about carrying drink bottles. They're like, nah, what am I going to do with a drink bottle? Like, I'm not going to drink. It's an hour 50.
I see where you're coming from, and I agree, but I just look at it from the, I guess, safety point of view, that some of those rules are probably there for that reason.
I can imagine. And if it's a hot day, that runner will take a drink bottle because it's in his best interest from a performance standpoint. Hot day, takes a drink bottle, fills it for water. But on a hot day, he takes a drink bottle that's not full, So they won't enforce the rule. So say he takes an empty drink bottle, goes off course, runs into some farmland. The guy's not going to be able to bore for water and fill his drink bottle. He's still out there with an empty drink bottle. He's not going to get DQ'd, though, because he's got an empty drink bottle. Like,
but you've run ultra. Have you run any ultra? Have you run in ultras where you've had to actually take mandatory gear?
Right. Yeah,
is and Bogong to Hotham record holder you're talking to.
Yeah, yeah. So why did you take that stuff
with the heavy kit? Because we're in the mountains. The mountains, and it's for safety.
Yeah, but it slows you down. Like you, but you're a good runner, and you wouldn't need half that stuff. So why'd you take it?
Yeah, you're
need stuff because when you're up there, things change on a dime. The mountains is a different place. Like, it's not in your backyard. You're in the mountains. It can go from being 20 degrees to being -5 and raining in 5 minutes. And it's the course is not well marked. And you go off course up there and you can literally be lost and stuck out there for a night. So I have no qualms in taking gear with me on those mountain runs because it's a scary place. This is not a scary place. It's one of the busiest walking trails in Victoria. Plus, it's in, like 5 minutes either way, you're in someone's house.
A lot of the people that enter Two Bays, though, take a lot longer than this person. And it's always like this weekend in January where it could easily be 35 or 40 degrees. So isn't it just like a good precaution to have in place and just like you just blanket the field and say everyone must carry a drink bottle?
Cool, they take a drink bottle. They'd be stupid not to take a drink bottle if it's that hot.
Mm.
Don't disqualify someone for not doing it though. Like, fuck. Anyway, you blokes.
Just anyway, asking some questions.
Good on Tash Fraser. Ballarat girl comes second.
Always listen to the show. Good support.
As a sign, though, as a sign of the field quality, Lucy Bartholomew came third, and the guy who came second, Ash. He'll probably admit that he's not the fastest runner out there either. So it used to be a very high quality field, and the ladies top 2 to 3, very quality, but the men's was a weak field.
Mm-hmm. Maybe next week's topic, why is the trail run scene dropping off?
Well, I don't think there's a lot more. Anyway, I'll get into it.
Jeez. Any suggestions, send them through to Julian Spence at therunningcompany.com. Sort that out. We're done, boys. Dane Verway interview coming up. Goes for about 45 minutes. It's not a massive one, but Dane's one of our best marathon runners here. Just won Hobart Marathon, obviously, in 224, Dane. He's done 7 weeks training over in Kenya, so we had a great conversation about that, and he was rooming next to Mo Farah, so we had a bit of a conversation about that. And he's also a pretty gun physio. He travels with the Australian team when they were leading up to the Olympics over at Rio, and has done a bit of work for Nitro Athletics before, so has treated some pretty handy athletes. I had a really good chat to Dane. Brad, I think there's some really good nutrition stuff that you'll get out of this conversation when you hear this one. I've already got off the phone to his dietitian this afternoon just after hearing it. It's pretty good, so enjoy that interview. We'll be back next week with another show. Sorry this is going out a bit late. We've been a bit over the place this week. But quickly before we go, if there's someone out there who wouldn't mind doing some work for us, maybe doing a bit of a summary, type up a bit of a summary of the show each week, and wants to be the first employee for Inside Running Podcast, send me an email at bradytrailfoot@gmail.com and I'll put you to work. You won't get paid, but you'll be able to help out the show just because we're a bit strapped for time and we might give you a trucker hat when they appear. So enjoy this interview coming up with Dane Verway. Much on this week, boys.
185K,
yeah,
and Netflix.
That's a bit. Yeah. The holiday's nearly over, though, Brad. They're going quick. We're nearly done.
I might struggle to get back into work.
Julian, what are you doing?
This week, nothing.
Nothing, just training.
Training.
Darren Wilson, Australian half marathon record holder, 60 minutes and 2 seconds. That's what you said. Carlos isn't on the list. All right. Cheers, guys. See you next week.
See ya.
Keep listening. Yeah. We need to be above Lance Armstrong in the ratings, so keep downloading the show, guys. Cheers. All right.
See you, boys.
Over and out. Rightio, Dane Verway, welcome to Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining me, fresh off a big win down at the Hobart Marathon.
Hey, Brody. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. I'm still on cloud nine little bit. I can't believe it actually happened. It still feels a bit like a dream.
Yeah, well, we could have been a bit more organised with this interview, considering we spent a bit of time with each other the last couple of days down there, but we're still converting to Skype and organising a quick chat on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I know. We had a bit of time there, but we're both a bit knackered, I think, and it's probably good to do it now.
Yeah, it was one of those things. It's like I could pull out the microphones, but having a beer with lunch was probably the better option, I think.
Yeah, that was a good crew we had there just after the race.
Yeah, it was good, eh? Yeah. So maybe we might start there, Dano. Let's go back to why Hobart Marathon and maybe how the race panned out and how you felt it went.
Yeah, well, I sort of penciled it in about 3 months before the race. I really wanted to, after seeing Mattress, Matt Davey, my training partner, win Auckland and win a marathon, I thought, oh, gee, you know, it'd be great to win a marathon and say that I've won a marathon before. Little did I know that, you know, Dion and Sam and at the time I thought David Craniti might enter until the last night. So I didn't know it was going to be so challenging to win. So I penciled it in 3 months before and trained pretty hard for the 10, 11 weeks before it. And I just wanted to do something that was close to home. I've done a few international ones now, Rotterdam and Japan, and they're hard because you don't know how you're going to be on the day. So you enter it 6 months before and you might get an injury just before it. So I thought it was just good to enter something in Australia. It couldn't have gone better.
Yeah, talk us through the race, because originally I thought you were maybe using this as a hard training run building towards Canberra, but did things change maybe the couple of weeks building into it?
Yeah, that definitely was the plan. And then when I realised a few of those other guys were in it, I realised I was in pretty good shape when I ran Steigen and a few of my other training sessions that I completed, I thought, oh, hang on. And I don't know, as a runner always does, you can get a bit carried away. And when we were out there, like I still didn't know what I was going to run. I thought I might run 2:30, 2:27, because I knew it was pretty hilly, so I respected the course a bit. But I think the fact that the race actually turned into a race, it was quite phenomenal. Dion and I were together the whole way, and Sam, the little Ethiopian, he went out really hard, and he had about a minute on us at one stage, and then we caught him actually at 23K, ran with him until about 34, and then he went again, and I thought that was race over. He got away again, but then Dion and I worked really well together the whole way, and crowd support was awesome, and we ended up catching Sammy again at 38K, and then we all ran together till 40K. And then I tried to make a move with 2K to go, and it wasn't much of a move. I think Dion covered it pretty well, and then we got to sort of the last 600, 500 metres, the last uphill, and I don't know, I just ran really scared and just tried as hard as I could. I think I saw you and a few of the other boys around that time, and you're cheering, and that really helped. And I didn't know I'd won until... yeah, probably the last couple of metres, and then that was one of the best feelings ever.
Yeah, so for people that don't know the results, you won it in 2:24:54, but Dion was only 8 seconds behind you in 2:25:02. So, and Sam was probably, you know, 10 seconds behind Dion. So quite a close race for a marathon.
Yeah, I think that's why we ran fast. So I don't think we intentionally set out to run fast, but... the fact that the marathon actually turned into a race and we weren't, I wasn't worried about splits at all. I think we went through in 73 for the first half and then ran a 71 second half. So it was a massive negative split because we were chasing Sammy. And I haven't really, I think the last four or so marathons I've died in that last bit. So I think the race and the adrenaline involved meant that it wasn't as painful. I mean, it was still painful, but... I think that helped. You weren't just by yourself looking at your watch and just looking at splits the whole time.
There's something in that, isn't there, I reckon? And then there's even the less pressure about picking, as you said before, a big overseas marathon, which is 6 or 12 months down the track, and kind of building a lot of pressure around yourself to perform on that given day. Just seeing you with like 300, I saw you with about, I reckon, 2K, maybe 1,500 metres to go, and you were flying, and then seeing you with 300 metres to go, and you just gave me a bit of a look at the side of the road there, and you were just in beast mode. Like, there was no smile. Yeah. There was just like...
I pretty sure my eyes were popping out of my head.
Oh, it was such a good look. I'm going to remember it for a long time. But I was comparing that to the way of... Oh, sorry, mate, what were you saying?
Definitely get a bit of white line fever.
Yeah, that's good.
I can see the line, and gives me a little bit more energy.
And, yeah, I think that's a good thing. Like, as you said, running scared, like putting yourself in a position where you're the one getting hunted down, and it's like you and the finish line, and hopefully you're strong enough to get there first.
Yeah, I had no idea where Dion was. Like, for all I knew, he was right behind me, and I didn't look back. I just sort of just hoped. And, I mean, all I was doing, I was just trying to do my best, I was just focused on putting one foot in front of the other as fast as I could, and I just got lucky.
No, I don't think so. I think there's a lot of preparation. I don't think that's luck involved. Just even the way I've only ran the 3 marathons, but I've battled massively over the last 5K, and you guys pretty much closed the last 5K quicker than you've closed any other races. And I know you've had some issues in the past about, you know, over at Biwa with a 2:31 over there and a 2:27 at Melbourne and a 2:27 at Rotterdam. Like, do you think everything just come together, or was it nutrition? And what happened this time to be able to finish off strong?
Yeah, I think with those overseas ones, you book them 6 months in advance, and so you hope that everything goes well. If your prep hasn't been perfect, you still do them, like, because you've paid so much, you've invested in the trip. So I'd say, my preparation for Biwa and Rotterdam wasn't perfect, and I was really proud of how I ran on those days. But definitely preparation actually went spot on for Hobart this time around. So it probably was just the fact that I was able to do all my runs and get a good sort of 10-11 weeks in where, I just got lucky and didn't have any injuries. It went all smoothly. Yeah. I've also seen a dietitian at work and worked out specifically how much carbs I need for the duration of the event, a bit of a strategy during the event and also the 2 days before it. So whether that helped a little bit, because that was something I tried differently this time around than the other two as well. And the slower pace as well, 73 for the first half. Like, normally in those other few races, I've really tried to go for a time and gone out a bit harder, and that probably helped that back end.
Can you share your plan, mate? What did the dietitian recommend?
Yeah, I did this 2.5 hour treadmill test, and so he took blood samples, and I had to wear this mask every 20 minutes, and it calculated how much glucose I was metabolizing and how much fats I was metabolizing. So then he could work out what sort of nutrition strategy I needed to do. And so he worked out that I needed to have 90 grams of carbs per hour. So, and that's the maximal amount of carbs that your guts can absorb. So I put in 20 grams of glucose and 10 grams of fructose just in a small 250 ml drink bottle, and I had that every 20 minutes. Well, that was the plan. And then in the lead up, the 2 days lead up, the carb loading, I had 840 grams of carbs each day. So I was just eating a lot of rice crackers, and that was a good way. I found that I just was having that in between pasta meals, and then a lot of cranberry juice, and the cranberry juice, I actually put a bit more glucose powder inside the cranberry juice, and like having fluids was like a really good strategy to not feel so full, but still have the carbs that I needed.
Yeah, right. Is this something that everyone can access? Because it sounds like a perfect way to kind of get your individual nutrition plan sorted.
Yeah. So his name's Chris Rauch, and he works at my clinic that I work at as a physio. And he's done a fair bit of studies at Monash Uni with sports nutrition. So he is really keen to take on a few more endurance athletes and loves it himself.
Awesome.
I'm sure there's a lot of dietitians out there doing this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen some dietitians and stuff in the past, but never been asked to get on the treadmill for 2.5 hours and really kind of understand the personal body. It's more kind of like just looking at your sweat rate and maybe getting on and off the scales before sessions and then following kind of the generic stuff that's on the back of gels.
Yeah, so this was at Monash Uni in Clayton that I did it. And so he's done a fair... He's part of a few studies, and he's sort of just taking subjects and getting their data, and yeah, he's right into it.
And going back to that treadmill, like what kind of pace were you sitting on for 2.5 hours? Like that's a big, big session.
Yeah. So he just wanted me to sit at, I was just sitting at 420s for 2.5 hours because even just sitting at 420s, I just had to get up to 2 hours. The key was to get up to 2 hours and even just at 420s, you pretty much use most of your carb stores. And then the main test was, at 2 hours, he got me running marathon pace for 10 minutes. And then he really analyzed that part to see what I was mainly metabolizing. That's how I understood it. I've got a very vague understanding of it. And then from that, he worked out that I just metabolized carbs mainly, and I really needed to increase my levels of carb intake during the race and before the race because I wasn't very good at metabolizing fat. So if I ran out of carbs, I was going to hit the wall.
Yeah, couldn't access that fat late in the race.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. So going forward for you as a marathon runner, do you think that's a bit of a thing you're going to continue to do to hit the kind of Australia domestic scene and try and pick up a couple of wins rather than heading overseas?
Yeah, I was thinking of doing Canberra as well, and I still think I am. So I'll just see how I recover over the next couple of weeks. I don't know I'll just try my best, and it depends who's there. But I won't necessarily go for the win. I'll just try to have another good run. Do Canberra, and then actually one of the big goals of Matt and my training partner and I has been to do Berlin. So we're thinking of doing that in September, and yeah, very much inspired by you guys over the last couple of years and watching you online. Do Canberra, do Berlin. Maybe the next ones.
Good race to be in, I reckon, Berlin. It's super fast over there. And you can still have that racing component because there's so many people around, even though if you're sitting at 50th or 60th place overall.
Yeah. I reckon I'd love it. I just love running marathons. So it'd be a great one just to tick off and say that you've done one of the fastest courses in the world.
Yeah, it's a cool kind of event as well to just be a part of all that hype leading into it and... just the crowd. It's just an amazing event. But, yeah, hopefully see you over there. Moose and I are going to do it again this year. So, it'd be good. Yeah, you'll probably smash us with this form you're in at the moment.
Nah. 224 is a long way off. 218 and 220.
Hey, Moose was a 224 guy in Australia, and then he went and became a 217 guy. So, I reckon there's something in that.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope there's a couple of minutes, but I just don't know if I'm that caliber. I think I can hopefully take another minute or two off, but we'll just wait and see. You don't want to, as a runner, ever sort of put a ceiling effect on your ability. I've always just sort of, just kept chipping away, and often you surprise yourself with running if you're just sort of persistent and just sort of keep hanging in there.
Yeah, it's one of the things I want to talk to you about, because you've been in the sport as long as I think I started maybe 12 years ago, and you've just been you've been always there. You're one of the kind of guys that hasn't dropped off, hasn't seemed to disappear for 2 or 3 years. So, like, what age did you get into it?
Yeah, I got into it very young. I reckon I was inspired sort of by a bit of early success just at school, and I reckon I really got serious about it in grade six, and started probably training sort of five days, six days a week. You know, not huge, like mileage, just like little 3K runs. But yeah, from a pretty young age. I suppose I've just stuck with it because I love it. It's become a big part of my life. Both my parents are PE teachers. They always ran, like they always, you know, got up in the morning and went for a run. So just became a part of my lifestyle. And now I definitely know it's just almost as helpful mentally for me as it is, you know, chasing times or trying to get better as a runner.
Have you seen a few changes over the years in the sport? Like, you're a pretty big, I guess, participant and competitor at the AV season every winter. And have you seen kind of, yeah, some different trends come and go?
Yeah. You see, I suppose probably one of the biggest ones is you see a lot of people drop out, like you sort of mentioned, and then a lot of athletes come and go. As of trends, I think, yeah, definitely technology is getting a bit more involved with Strava and, you know, seeing the developments of Parkrun and then a few community groups like TXR, like down our way, which is just free running groups. That's been great. And I definitely reckon there's a bit of a boom, like a lot of people sort of just looking after themselves a little bit more, which is good to see. With for a while there, I think the general community was getting a bit sedentary. So I definitely think there's a bit of a boom community wise, running wise, and hopefully that keeps expanding. But from an Athletics Victoria point of view, it's still much of a muchness. I think it hasn't really got bigger, but fun runs seem to be getting a little bit bigger from what I sort of can see.
Mm. And Julian did want me to ask you, because talking about technology, he wants to know your thoughts on the 4%ers, the shoes. I think he hooked those up for you, didn't he?
Yeah, he was great with that. He got them for me, and, you know, I got a pretty small foot, so he did well there. I couldn't find them anywhere. They're definitely they're great. Like, I haven't pulled up sore in my calves at all, and normally, like the last 5 years, I've struggled with Achilles issues and stiffness there. Quite a lot. So that's a testament to the shoe, like that carbon plate and that foam, like it does something. Like, I'm not even sore in my calves at all, which I find quite phenomenal. And performance wise, I haven't had a bad race in them yet. So I don't think it's placebo either. I think that they definitely help a little bit. And, you know, the top three guys from that Hobart race, were wearing them. Yeah, they're a great shoe. I'll keep wearing them for sure.
Yeah, I'm the same, actually. I pulled up really good after doing the half, and I was just like, woke up next morning and I'm like, this is strange. Like, usually I'm cooked after a solid half marathon, but yeah, back into training pretty quickly, which has been a good thing. And I'll put that a bit down to the shoes as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, why not wear a shoe that, you know, helps with recovery and then helps with performance? But I don't know whether they're just going to become sort of, I've been talking to a few people, like, remember with swimming, the shark fin suit, like the suit that Ian Thorpe used to wear. Soon they got restrictions on that and they got banned. And
yeah, that's right.
I don't know whether that'll happen in a few years or not. I don't think it's as I think they got more pressing matters with the whole drug saga in athletics.
I don't think the IAAF needs to be worrying about the shoes just quite yet. There's a few other people to chase down in countries, I think. Hey, we wanted to also get you on the show because the listeners might not know, but you're also a pretty elite physio. You've represented Australia with the world cross-country team over at Uganda as their physio, and you've been the official physio at the Nitro Series before. Do you want to maybe talk us through some pretty kind of big experiences and being involved with the very top end athletes in the world?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate enough to go to two world crosses as the as a physio, like in China in 2015 and Uganda last year. And those experiences were phenomenal. And then the experiences that I've had just working with those elite athletes, whether it was in Flagstaff, Arizona, like on a couple of altitude training camps in 2015 and 2016 as well, and then at Falls Creek. Working at Nitro and being really close to Usain Bolt, and he had his own physio though, so I didn't get to work on him. But that just chatting to all those athletes, and I suppose because I've always been a keen runner, like but just sort of not being blessed with the ability of some of those athletes, like I suppose it's the next best thing, and you sort of just involve with that inner sanctum and sort of get to talk athletics. And I love talking athletics, so you still do a bit of physio, but you just sort of have a chat. And then if you're going along with to say Flagstaff, and you're sort of doing 3 weeks there, 3 week stint there, and you're helping all the athletes, you're sort of the mechanic, like you're keeping them in check and helping prevent injuries, but you're also a part of it. You go for runs with them and do a little bit of training, sneaky training yourself.
Yeah, I've seen you like jumping in sessions and stuff and pacing through people. And it must be you're one of the full-time athletes as well.
Yeah, but I think if you can, like a runner likes being treated by a runner, because you can, like if you say don't run, you know what it feels like. Like I hate when someone tells me not to run. So you're always trying to keep them running, and also you understand their niggles. Like you've had them. I mean, I've had just about every niggle, or I've seen just about every niggle there is. I think they appreciate that you're a runner, and they like it if you're sort of talking shop and talking running, and you're out there with them amongst it, joining in.
Yeah, trying to towel them up in some reps. That's always a good thing.
Nah, not at all, but trying.
Trying to hang on the back of those top end guys. What do you learn about it though? Like, do you come away from those trips and just, I don't know, just have like a wealth of knowledge about how those top guys operate, probably just as much outside the training sessions as much as in them?
Oh, for sure. You get to know all their personalities, because every athlete's so different. Just chatting to them, you get to know them, and so that you know what makes them tick. You learn a lot. Like every one of those elite athletes is different. Some are more laid back, so some are more highly strung, and you sort of work in with that, and that's how you sort of tie in your advice or your exercises or your interventions or your treatment. But you don't change much on those trips. Like most of those athletes could be physios themselves pretty much. Like they know their muscles and they know rehab, they know gym programs back to front. And so you don't change much. You sort of try to work in with what they've done in the past. Maybe give a little bit of advice if you think that they're not quite on the right track. But yeah, you do learn a lot. I'm pretty fortunate. And I've probably got to say thanks to a few people like Nikki Frey, who was one of my junior coaches, who sort of really has been a good contact and got me involved with some of those teams. And my boss, actually, Rob O'Donnell, who used to do the World Cross physio, and he sort of helped get me involved as well.
Yeah, that's good. And I guess just to compare the way they train, when they go to Flagstaff leading into the Rio Olympics or something, is that similar to what they're doing in Australia and Falls Creek, and they're just doing it in a different location, or do you see differences in the way they're putting together their training programs?
Yeah, it's pretty similar, but there's a lot more things to do up at Flagstaff, whereas at Falls you sort of have to go down to Mount Beauty, so they can sort of relax a little bit more at Flagstaff and go for coffee or stuff like that in the middle of the day. But they're training high altitude training. It's a pretty similar, it's a bit higher, there's a track down at Sedona, which is about half an hour from Flagstaff. So a lot of, they can do some track work, and that's still at altitude. So that's interesting. There's gyms there. There's pools there. At Falls, there's no pool on the mountain. So there's pools and gyms and tracks at altitude. There's a wealth of trails. There's way more trails than Falls. And there's also a few other elite athletes there that just live there, like Northern Arizona Uni's there, and that Hoka 1-1 elite training squad's there. So they've got a lot of athletes too. So you sort of can jump in with them and do a lot of your Wednesday, Sunday longer runs with them. And then you often see, really elite athletes like Mo Farah or, other elites like that popping in and training there because it's such a well-known place to train. So, they're a little bit different, but much of a muchness. The athletes do pretty similar training at both venues.
Yeah, and back to that, you spent some time with Mo. Were you rooming in the room next to him in Kenya, like the high altitude center over there? Like, talk us through that trip. How'd that come about?
Yeah, in 2014, I went to Kenya for 7 weeks, and that was just amazing. I sort of just came up with that idea myself just because I love running. I've always sort of been interested in and just wondered, like, why is Kenya so good? And I wanted to sort of work out why. And I thought I'd worked for 2 years before that and just made sure I just saved all my annual leave. I just get 4 weeks a year. So I piled that and had the 7 weeks just over in Kenya. And I stayed at Lorna Kiplagat's high altitude training center in I-10. I roomed next to Mo Farah, like the whole of the GB team for 2014 Com Games were training there. So I jumped in with a lot of runs with those guys. Steve Cram and Paula Radcliffe were there as well. I met Brother Colm. I met the Robinson twins. I did a few runs with them. But just to talk you through like how incredible it was, like the camp chef was a 209 marathoner. I caught a taxi with one of the Kenyans at one point, and I got chatting to him. He was just sucking his lollipop, and he just looked a bit like a runner. And I was like, "Oh, do you run?" Because everyone runs over there. And he's like, "Yeah, I run." And I was like, "Oh, so what do you do?" "Oh, I do 1500." And I was like, "Oh, what time?" And he's like, "Oh, I did 3:31 last year at Monaco." So he came fifth in the Golden League to Kiprop the year before, but there he was driving taxis because he was fifth best Kenyan.
Australian record lifetime.
Exactly. Yeah. But not only that, it was just an amazing experience. Like I'd recommend going to Africa to anyone because it just gives you so much perspective on life. They're so happy and relaxed there, despite, the nation being so poor. I was stuck in a 2-hour traffic jam at one point. They weren't, angry or yelling. They were sitting back all relaxed. It's just a great atmosphere, and I got a lot out of that trip, and I learned a lot about life.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. And you went by yourself?
Yeah. Mum was pretty worried.
Far out. It's a pretty amazing trip. You come home and tell your mum you're going to Kenya by yourself for 7 weeks.
Yeah, and I landed in Nairobi, and that was the scariest part. So I spent 5 hours in Nairobi, and I pretty much just hid in the airport because when I got there, there was a gang of, just Kenyans walking around with guns, and that was pretty confronting. I'd never seen anything like that. So I just hid in the airport, and once I got to Eldoret and I-10, it was very different. It was sort of like a village, and everyone's very relaxed. You didn't feel worried or scared, and you felt very much at home. They were so inviting.
Yeah, what about like the sessions and like were you that one that track you always see on like the documentaries and stuff, that kind of like sandy athletics track that's not even 400 meters, but everyone just bangs out their sessions. Like, were you training there and stuff?
Oh, sorry. When I was there, actually, James Nipperis and Emily Brikoshek came about 2 weeks later. And so, yeah, I remember doing a few track sessions on that track, and Nipperis, James, joined in one of the sessions. There was 20 by 400. And I just remember him holding onto the back of like a long line of Kenyans and just dust going everywhere. And everyone just finishes all red. Like all your clothes just get all red. And it's just incredible. You go to the track and there's 200 Kenyans all doing different sessions, all different packs, but just all just running so fast. Another one of the big sessions is the fartlek session. So you go to a different venue, and I remember Kip saying he was the world record holder at the time, and he was standing on this rock and just sort of barking out orders before the session. And there was about 200 Kenyans just standing around him, watching him, and he was saying, all right, you know, today we've got 20 by 1 minute with 1 minute recovery, or it might have been 20 by 2 minute with 1 minute recovery. And then they just all stormed off, and it was incredible to see. Like I was near on last, but you're just running over these roads that are so rocky. Like there's no flat roads in Kenya, and they were just flying, just rocks everywhere and hills everywhere.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it? And the altitude, like, did you feel like you adapted to that pretty well when you were there?
Yeah, I was really lucky. Like I remember the 2 months before it, I had a bit of a rough patch with an Achilles injury, so I didn't actually think I was going to be able to run over there, which I was really worried about, but it ended up being a blessing. So the first week or two, I was taking it pretty easy, just jogging, and then I started training harder. And I remember by about the 10th day, I finally could actually felt like I could run up the hills, whereas early on, I was really, really puffing and almost feeling like I needed to walk up some of the hills, which was pretty eye-opening, but it really does, you do feel it there. But then after about 10 days, you seem to already get some kind of adaptation.
Yeah, and I guess to compare the training philosophies again to Australia, like are they doing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday sessions and the long run Sundays, or three? I've heard like 3 a days. Sometimes I'll go super early in the morning and then do like a 1 o'clock run and then like a PM run, or like what did you notice over there?
Yeah, they a lot of them do that 3 a day training where they wake up really early and it's just a real slow shuffle and then a bit of a stretch. Then they midday they might sort of that's really early. Sorry, that's 5 or 6 o'clock, and then sort of 9 or 10 o'clock they do another run, and then they do another run in the afternoon. I mean, it's give or take, and there's a little bit of variability, but yeah, it's often that Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday training, so that typical model, and then Sunday they have off. Actually, they don't run at all. A lot of them don't.
That's because they're very heavy Catholic and stuff too, isn't it? So they all go to church and have the day off. Yeah.
Yeah, and you go on Sunday. There's nothing open, and it's really quiet. Yeah, it was interesting. I actually got to me and James Nipperis got to meet Brother Colm, and we actually he drove us to a restaurant, and we had dinner with him and got to talk to him and talk about his athletes, and he was so inviting. And that's just what it's like there. They just invite you, and if you've come over there and you're willing to sort of train like them, they love it, and they just keep saying, train like us, and you'll win easy. So it's a really good attitude, and you feel a part of it, and they're very welcoming.
Yeah, people that don't know as well, like Brother Collins, David Radish's coach, the 800-meter world record holder, so in pretty good company there for dinner.
Yeah, it was incredible. I had to sort of, it was another sort of dreamlike experience.
Yeah, and back to the Mo Farah stuff. Like, did you know he was rooming next to you, or just come out of your room one day and he was walking into the one next year?
Yeah, I didn't know he was coming. Like, it was just pure coincidence, and yeah, sure enough, a few days in, I see that Mo Farah's here, and he's in the room next door playing Xbox. with all his
bit of FIFA.
Look at all his shoes out the front, and they've all got it. You know, him doing the MoBot. And he was a nice guy. Like, breakfast with him a couple of times. And I remember, getting a photo with him as well, out the front of the high altitude training center. It was surreal. And I got to watch him do a lot of gym sessions as well, because there's a pool and a gym there, and see the Robinsons in the gym as well, and just the kind of exercises they do. It was interesting to see just what the best guys in the world do.
Did you get bored? Like, I'm thinking 7 weeks is a long time to be at a training camp, and I know you're running hard and spending a lot of time training, but there's still a lot of downtime there.
Yeah, so in the downtime, like, I'd often go to the village, and I met a lot of Kenyans and families there, and they just would like take me in and then, you know, share some goat's milk together, or I just try to immerse myself in the culture. Going down to the town was a really good way to just make sure it was more than just running. So I went on a couple of safaris and just tried to just see how the Kenyans lived, and it was such a labor intensive lifestyle compared to back here. And you saw cows on the back of bikes, legs out of windows in matatus, which are the taxis there, like, 25 people in the trucks, just to get around. The roads there was, horrible, like just potholes everywhere, and the traffic, and the road rules. There was no road rules, like, it was just mayhem. So it was just amazing to see how the Kenyans lived, and eye-opening, and I suppose that's what I did. Make sure it was just a bit more than running.
Yeah, and I guess, not so much materialistic rich, but just rich in spirit and rich in their freedom. And as you said, like, their sense of calm when they're in stressful situations. As you said, you learn a lot about life in general over there as well.
You get asked to sort of try to sponsor a lot of athletes. So I had all these secondhand shoes. I had about 15 pairs that I brought over, and I just gave them to any of the Kenyans that I thought were, just really trying hard. And because a lot of them come up and ask if you can sponsor them, you sort of feel all wealth and wealthy and rich over there. And everyone's sort of coming up to you. And like, I went to a few people's places, and all they've got is just a mattress and a bit of a hut, and then they just run, and they've got one pair of runners. And I remember getting passed by this guy in basketball shorts, the worst pair of runners, like his socks were sort of hanging out the end, like, I think they were basketball shoes. They looked about 2 years, 3 years old. But he was an amazing runner. If I gave them a pair of shoes, it's amazing, like, how happy they were. It was equivalent to sort of a month's wage. They were just so appreciative. So you could make a little bit of a difference from that point of view. But it was just, really eye-opening, and so grateful for that experience.
Yeah, plans to go back?
Yeah, I remember at the time saying, oh, yeah, for sure I'm going to go back. Things sort of happen in your life, got so many things on.
Getting engaged, getting married, going to Berlin,
I definitely would love to, and I'd recommend it to anyone. My brother just recently came back from Africa, not Kenya as such, but he said the same thing. He absolutely loved it, and he was 6 months away, and he said that was the best part of his trip.
Hey, there's a bit of speculation about the drug testing and stuff in Kenya. You didn't see any, blood bags hanging from people's beds or anything like that over there? Or did you see testing going on?
I did see testing. So when I was over there about 5 weeks in, I remember testers came and there was some Romanians training there, and apparently one of the Romanians jumped out the window as soon as he knew the testers were coming, put his hoodie on and quickly ran to the airport and said his mum was sick. So that was a bit eye-opening. But, yeah, otherwise I didn't see anything too suspicious. The other thing, McLoofy was there, so the London 1500 gold medalist, and I went on a safari with him and got to know him. He was an amazing guy. He actually emailed me once I got home and said, you know, I hope you got home okay. So as a person, he was a great guy, but I know there's a lot of speculation about him. I didn't see anything suspicious. But I remember coming back after Kenya about 2 or 3 months once I got back. There was a few documentaries, and it actually they found a few EPO packets in bins at the high altitude training center. So I think it does go on, but I didn't see much of it.
Yeah.
Or any of it. Yeah.
Don't throw anyone under the bus on this podcast, mate. We're Moose on the Loose usually gets us in a bit of trouble each week, so we'll just yeah. We won't chuck anyone under. Hey, it would be a shame if we didn't spend some time. There'd be a lot of people out there running at the moment listening to, you know, a top-of-the-range kind of physio who goes over the Australian team and stuff talk here. But have you got any kind of, I guess, tips for runners to keep injury-free?
Yeah, probably the biggest one that, and it might sound simple, is training load. I think as runners, we can get really passionate and just really carried away once we have a good result and go, oh, okay, more's better. And you might think you're on top of it, but you sort of just slowly creep up a bit too fast. It's probably just making sure that your training load doesn't increase too quickly. And there's a few general rules of thumb. There's this paper by Tim Gabbett, who he says you've got to monitor your chronic workload. So your last 4 weeks, and so say you work out your last 4 weeks mileage, and then you make sure that your acute load, which is your current week, the acute on chronic ratio is not more than 1.5. So say, you know, your chronic workload 60, and then suddenly you step it up to 120. 120 over 60, your acute on chronic ratio is 2. I mean, it's just general logic, but probably the biggest one is trying to just increase by, you know, that 5% each week and just one parameter at a time. That's probably the biggest one. Otherwise, adding intensity too quickly. I see that a lot in the clinic, or adding hills too quickly, or footwear changes, and people really getting carried away with those, with the lighter shoes and too much road running. Just adding things like speed, hills and lighter shoes slowly into the training program. So more about decisions in training. And what surfaces, what shoes. It's better to just do a lot of slower base training early on, so that you do get strong, robust legs. And then it's probably good to know that once you've strung, you know, 6 to 8 months together of consistent training, you're actually more injury-proof than you were at the start. So they actually say that, you know, regular high mileage is actually good and stops you from getting injured. It's getting there slowly, and it's just being consistent and staying there consistently.
Yeah, and this comes from a guy who's been running pretty well for the last 20 years, I guess.
Yeah, I think it has been a bit over 20 years now, so it's gone pretty fast. I can't believe that it's 20 years, actually.
Yeah, locally, like on the Australian scene, there's not many guys who would have been in it as long as you. So it's a bit of something you should be proud of, and, yeah, tip your hat on.
Yeah, no, thanks, Brady.
Beautiful, mate. Well, we might leave it there. Thanks for giving up some time for Inside Running podcast this week and sharing all those stories about Kenya and, you know, helping the Australian team prepare. And congratulations again on the first marathon win over in Hobart on the weekend.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for giving me the chance to talk.
No worries, mate. Any socials you want to plug? Where can people... You're not on Strava, are you?
No, I'm not on Strava. I get too carried away if I sort of start getting on that. I just sort of make sure I don't put it on Strava. I've actually got an account. I've got an Instagram account and Facebook account. I think it's just DS Burway. If you plug that in the search bar, you'll find me on Instagram.
Yeah,
and if but I'm not huge on social media. I don't really like self-promoting too much.
Yeah, but if someone's maybe listening to this and thought, hey, I've got a bit of a niggle, I live in Melbourne, this guy's a physio, where can they contact you for a bit of treatment?
Yeah, I've worked for the last 8 years at Southern Suburbs Physio Centre in Parkdale. And then we've also got a clinic in East Bentley where Rob O'Donnell works, and he's a pretty good running physio as well. That's where you find me.
Beautiful, mate. Thanks again for your time today. And, on behalf of both the boys, we really appreciate giving up some of your Wednesday morning a couple of days after a marathon where you hopefully are not too tired.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, Brady.
Cheers, Dano.
Thanks a lot again. All right, cheers.
Thanks, mate. Child, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Under the sun.